Would everyone take your seat, please? I know we have some people coming in at the moment. We're trying to finish this up. Apparently, we got a little late start, and I apologize for that. This is our fourth meeting of this series, and I want to remind you, first of all, for those of you that need to, turn on your hearing aids. And for those of you that don't worry about those things, turn your cell phones off so we won't have any disturbances. I want to also remind you that our next speaker on February the 8th, and I think we're across the street at that meeting. We'll confirm that to you, of course. But on February the 8th, we'll have Ambassador Richard M. Fairbanks, who is a counselor for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Dick Bodman tells me he's going to be a very interesting speaker, and I'm sure he will be. Again, go get everyone seated and be reasonably quiet for the invocation. Ellie, how are we doing, Ellie? 1 minute, she said. Okay. Well, I could do a stand-up comedian thing here for a minute. By the way, there was a great blues and jazz program at the Phil last night. I'll fill that in for a couple of minutes. How many went to that, by the way? Yeah, okay. Number of us. Okay. If you would be seated, I would like now to introduce our minister for the invocation, Reverend Jay Cross. And, Reverend, I'm going to turn the program over to you.
Thank you, Malcolm. Rather than ask all of you to stand where we are for the invocation, I would ask, please, that you remain seated and join me as we open the meeting with prayer. Almighty and eternal God, that we pause to join our hearts in prayer is the acknowledgement of our need of your Spirit. Help us to be thankful for all the things that we so often take for granted, for the goodness of our lives, for the abundance of our resources, for the blessings of our freedom. Make us ever mindful of the price that has been paid to obtain these things and the cost that must be met to keep them. Hear us, O God, as we pray for all those who are in or those who may seek places of influence and authority. So rule in their hearts that they may rightly use the trust committed to them for the good of all people. Through forums such as this one today, enable us better to understand others, that we may view their differences with charity, their virtues with appreciation, and their kindnesses to us with gratitude. And now illumine our minds and direct our thinking by what we hear, that our thoughts and our actions may merit your blessings. For we ask this to honor and glorify your name. Amen.
Okay, while you're, if you would commence quietly again, I would like to introduce Wade Keller. I would like to introduce Wade Keller, who is chairman of our student guest program, and Wade will tell you about the schools and the students today. And Wade, I'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Malcolm. Hello, everyone. I always like to introduce the sponsors. Because we really appreciate our sponsors that pay for the cost of having the guest. 2 weeks ago, at our last meeting, I was introducing the person who sponsored Immokalee High School. I got carried away with talking about how he sponsors and is involved with a trustee for the Guadalupe Center out in Immokalee, and he was very proud to be sponsoring Immokalee, and I failed to introduce him to you. So is Walt Blankley here? Walt, if you're here, would you stand? There's Walt back there. Let's thank Walt. That is really a wonderful program. And now if the students from Laley High School would please, we have two groups, Laley and Gulf Coast. I would ask Laley first to come up and join me here on the podium. Laley High School. And an interesting thing, I really appreciate this, the faculty member who did this. Our speaker today is the past president of Columbia, and all of the students from Laley High School have a Columbia heritage from Columbia. So it was really wonderful. Okay, before I forget again, the sponsor for Laley High School told me last year that when Laley High School comes, he wants to be the sponsor because he is really a Laley High School booster. John Pister from Marco Island was county commissioner for 12 years. He's been on Marco Island 37 years. He's very interested in Collier County and Marco Island still. John Pister, let us thank you. Now, I'll introduce the students one at a time, and they know that they have 1 minute. So, first of all, Sabrina Beth Carenda. Sabrina, here we go. Speak right into the microphone.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Carender. I'm from Bogota, Colombia. I've been in the States for about 12 years now. My father's from Kansas, and my mother's from Colombia. I love to travel. I'm a senior at Laley High School right now. Last year, I traveled to China with the People to People Student Ambassador Program. Before that, I went to Europe with my parents, and obviously, I'm foreign from a different country, so I just like love learning about different cultures and everything. I want to attend the Burnett Honors College at UCF. I'm still undecided about exactly where I'm going to go to school, but that's where I want to go. And I want to go into medicine. I'm fascinated with the student mind sometimes, so I'd like to study sociology. And I'm involved in cross country and Raiders and soccer and National Honor Society at Laley High School. And I love Laley, so go Laley.
And next is Jonathan Perez. Jonathan, please.
Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm a little nervous. I thought this was going to be a little small lunch. I'm currently a junior at Laley High School, and I'm top of my class right now with a GPA of 5.015 or something like that. I'm in the Laley High School JROTC program, and... Are you going to say the interesting facts, or should I?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, do you have mine? I'm sorry, I have to read this out because this is really a wonderful program. Our JROTC program is ranked among the top 10% in the nation, and seniors in the program average over $500,000 in total, combined all of them, in scholarships every year, and it's usually more than that. So it really is a great program. I would like to attend the University of Rochester, and... or Brown, but Rochester's my top choice. Sorry, I want to go into research into neurocybernetics. What that is integrating, connecting machines to the nervous system. So if you ever see those studies about quadriplegics moving mouse on a computer or something like that, that's what I wanted to go into. I'm in the JROTC Raider team. We placed second in the state last year, and we're hoping for our first this year. I'm a varsity letterman in cross country. I'm in the Laley High School debate team. And thank you.
Good job. And next is Rosa Madrid. Rosa.
Hello, my name is, like I said, Rosa Madrid. I'm Laley High School, and I'm currently a junior. Well, first of all, I think I'd have to say right now, first off about me, you learn I love music. I love taking every aspect into music into my life. I currently play three instruments. I play the tenor saxophone, I play the drums and the drum line and the marching band as well, and I also play the flute. So I think I definitely want to major in music or music education, help out other kids for music, because I think it's a wonderful thing everyone should have. I carry three letters. I carry my academic letter, my varsity letter, and then, of course, my band letter. And I love it, and I have done so many I've done a lot with music, so, I mean, I love it a lot. I also am currently in the National Honor Society of our school, and I am also in the Key Club in our school, which I love to do because it's more volunteer, gives me a chance to give back to community, of course. I definitely have to say a distinguishing fact about Lely High School is the fact that we have so many clubs, and they really try to get everyone involved. I know I'm in the Key Club, and I think it's definitely the busiest Key Club of the county. We do a lot of things with people. I know last weekend, my friend and I she put this together, this whole Build the Bear program to give bears back to the community for kids in hospitals and stuff. So we did that. I did that last weekend. And I just love giving back to the community as well. But I think that's probably my main.
Good job. Good job.
And last from Lely High School is Santiago Munoz. Santiago.
Wow. Okay, my name is Santiago Munoz. I'm from Colombia. I moved here when I was 10 years old. I've come a long way from then. I'm a senior at Lely High School. I'm also a Raider. I plan to go to Virginia Military Institute. I've already been accepted. I also hope to join the U.S. Army beforehand, go through boot camp, then go to VMI. I plan to be a civil engineer, and the reason that I go to Lely is because of all the great programs that they have, like Jonathan said, ROTC. Thankfully, since I'm a four-year ROTC student, I am getting a $180,000 scholarship to go to VMI. Would have never happened if it wasn't for them. So, thank you.
Okay, now we got one more set of students. Okay, would the Gulf Coast High School students please join me up here, please? Gulf Coast High School. Okay, our sponsor today, our sponsors today for Gulf Coast High School are Mary Jane and Carlton Cleveland. And Carlton said, be sure to mention that they live at Moorings Park and that he has been a member of the Forum Club since 1986. Mary Jane said, great program, pass the salt. So would Mary Jane and Carlton, would y'all stand and let us thank you? Okay, here we go with Gulf Coast. We need to keep it quick and to the point. Morgan Holloway, would you go first? Morgan.
Hi, I'm Morgan Holloway. I'm from Naples, Florida, and I go to Gulf Coast High School. I'm a senior. I'm involved in the National Honor Society. I'm vice president of Model United Nations, and I'm looking at attending college at either Illinois Wesleyan University or the University of Florida in the fall. I want to study political science and international relations. I've traveled to Europe, Italy, Austria, Germany with some of my teachers. So I'm really looking forward to that. And thank you for having us today.
Great. Emily Morrow. Emily.
Hi. My name is Emily Morrow. I'm a senior at Gulf Coast High School. I'm currently the valedictorian of our senior class. And I'm also involved, I'm the vice president of National Honor Society, the captain of our varsity softball team, and a member of the marching band, and I also play the flute. I've applied to four different schools, UF, Yale, Princeton, and Duke, and so I'm still awaiting decisions from those. And I hope to study either medicine, specifically neuroscience, or international relations. Thank you.
Sandra Jamie Block. Sandra.
Hi, I'm Sandra Jamie Block. I'm Venezuelan. I have been here for 3 years and a half, about. I'm planning to attend Florida Gulf Coast University for 2 years and then transfer to Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton. I'm going to major in business administration or international business.
Okay. Gerandy Del Prado. Gerandy.
Hi, my name is Gerandy Del Prado. I'm from Cuba. I've been here for about 3 years and a half, and I'm currently a senior at Gulf Coast High School. I play baseball and soccer. I run for track for my school. I'm currently involved in into the National Honor Society Club, Green Club, Marine Science Club, and Spanish Club. Planning to attend UF. So far, I got accepted into FIU and UCF, but UF, it's my main college, the first one, my first choice. And I want to go into criminology. Don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but I know that criminology is the right field for me, so hopefully I'll make it. And I'm really excited to be here. Just want to thank you all.
And our last student, Sarah Siski. Sarah.
And then there was one. Hello, everyone. Good morning or good afternoon. I don't know which. Thank you for having us here. My name is Sarah Siski. I am from Gulf Coast High School. I am editor-in-chief of the school newspaper, which I enjoy very much. I plan to attend Florida State University, obviously not because of the football team. Those of you who are laughing understand this. I plan to major in English with a concentration in writing, and I plan to either become a university professor or a contract lawyer. Thank you again for having us. I know, right? All right. Thank you very much.
The students know that after you've heard about their career goals and their colleges, that you may come up and talk to them after the meeting. And so they're expecting that, so please do that. And now, the chairman of our scholarship program, Ula Norris, would like to say a few words. Ula.
Thank you, Wade. Not all of you were present at the December meeting when we announced the launch of the new Forum Club Members Scholarship Program, so we wanted to mention it again today. But first of all, I want to thank all of those who contributed to the program already, and as you know, it will be very much appreciated. This scholarship is different from the Gentry Awards in as much as your contribution to it is tax deductible, and if you wanted to go to a specific student, that can be arranged. Otherwise, your contribution will go to a student selected by the committee consisting of Forum Club members. And you yourself may want to participate in the selection process. Just let me or Ellie know, or contact us for any other questions you may have. You probably will not hear any more announcements about this, but on your table in the basket, there will always be a form available. You may want to take a look at it. Our donors will be acknowledged periodically in our newsletter, and we will announce the recipients at the end of the season. Being retired, as many of us are, is easy to become removed from the lives and concerns of the younger people in our community. But these lunches give us an opportunity to become aware of their dreams and ambitions and to appreciate their talents. Our community will one day depend on them. We, the members of the Forum Club, are many, and we have the means. We could really help them greatly toward realizing their goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yola, very much, and thank you, Wade. Great comments from the speakers and the students, and especially that young lady who wants to go to Florida State University. Enjoy your lunch, and we'll continue the program shortly. Proceed. If I have your attention, please. Please continue your lunch as quietly as possible. We want to start the program because we got started a little bit late and we don't want to keep you here all afternoon. I would like to introduce our director who's responsible for bringing our guest speaker today, Josephine Morris, who's been a longtime director and member of this club. And Josephine, if you would step forward and introduce our guest, Josephine Morris.
Hello, everyone. Miembros del Forum Club, invitados, señoras y señores. Tengo el gran honor de presentar a nuestro orador hoy. Members of the Forum Club, guests and dear friends, it is a special pleasure for me to introduce our speaker today. A pleasure not only because President Pastrana is a long-standing friend, but also because he brings to us experience and wise insights that belie his youth, a warm and charming personality, and a visit that comes at a crucial time in hemispheric relations. It is no secret that the days of Fidel Castro's authority in Cuba are limited, or that the president of Venezuela is seeking to aggravate the United States administration, as well as to play a role in President Pastrana's country with regard to the rebels there. At the same time, there are political uncertainties in more traditionally stable countries, such as Ecuador and Bolivia, and relatively new governments in Mexico and Argentina. In each of these circumstances, and in several others, our government has important interests, and hopefully its involvement will be politically and diplomatically appropriate. There are few, if any, who can comment with more knowledge about the challenges facing Latin American nations today than President Pastrana, and certainly none who have been so intently associated with the role, both positive and negative, played by the United States in this region. As a leading journalist, mayor of Bogota, president of Colombia, and ambassador to the United States, he uniquely has been involved in challenges arising from the streets, slums, and rural villages to the highest seats of political and economic power in our hemisphere. I wish to welcome Maria Cristina de Pastrana, mother of Andres Pastrana, and wife of another distinguished Colombian president, the late Misael Pastrana Barrero. Mr. President, I am confident that we will all leave here today considerably enriched by your candid remarks. In el nombre del Forum Club, tengo el gran privilegio de invitarle al podium, señor presidente.
Thank you, Josephine, for your kind words, and thank you, Malcolm, also for inviting me to be here with all these such a nice and important people from Naples. I was here, Josephine, in 1995. I think it was for the first time with my mother and my father that passed away. We had this very nice meeting, so I think that we all remember that great man that was Brad and all the important things and nice things that he did for not only for the United States, for the world, especially also for our region. So I think that we all remember him today. Also, it was very pleasant to hear all my Colombian students that they are here in Naples and in Florida. I'm very proud of you. I think what you say today here for this important audience also, you should feel proud, my friends of Colombia and my also from the United States. Unfortunately, I don't speak such a good English like them, but I hope that I'll do it well today. The last thing, also for me, Joshua, today I think it's a very special day for me. This morning, I received the call of my wife and my sons. And they said, Daddy, happy 20th birthday. So you said, you think why it's your 20th or my 20th birthday. 20 years ago, this same day, January 26th, and at this same time, I think that's a coincidence, I was rescued by the Colombian National Police from a kidnap by the Medellin and the Cali cartel. From the hands of Pablo Escobar. So I think it's a very important day for me. So it's nice to be here with you celebrating this 20th birthday. Now to the point, I think if you were to ask me what is the biggest advance in Latin America in the last, or what has achieved in the 21st century, without any hesitation, I will reply, the consolidation of democracy. It reached its peak once the Inter-American Charter was approved of September 11, 2001, during the OAS General Assembly, which took place in Lima, Peru. I remember that day Secretary of State Powell was going to visit me, and the first resolution responding to the terrorist attack of that day was presented by my government in the OAS Assembly to support the American people on that tragic September 11. And indeed, if we compare today Latin America's current political map to that of the 70s, we would observe the following. During the 70s, there were dictatorships or military regimes all throughout Central and South America, with the exception of Costa Rica, Colombia, and Venezuela. Cuba, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic were not exempt from these type of regimes. On the contrary, when the 20th century finished and the 21st century began, democracy became the general rule. And currently, the only country that remains under a non-democratic elected government was, until is, still is, Cuba. It is expected that the transition which we are at the present living culminates with a regime similar democratic principle to those which we have defended, even under adversity. And this shall be as the new challenge for Latin America. Both the government and the political parties should act accordingly to this conduct. And without a doubt, this is a great advance that has and will continue to allow the economic and social progress of the region. However, the democracy in Latin America today show lights and shadows, which I would like to analyze with you today. Maybe we could ask a question. Is Latin America going towards the left? The main temptation which political analysts are likely to fall is into classify the Latin American states as leftist or rightist government. This can be seen as a simple example because the division becomes depend either on the definition or the starting point. On one way or another, it helps provide clarity. In some ways, almost 20 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the categories used during the Cold War seem to have re-emerged in Latin America. When we see some Latin American rulers speaking about a revolution against the Yankee imperialist, or talking about the arrival of the new socialism, it is impossible not to recall the terminology used by the rebellious group that fought against the dictatorships of the Cold War. There is no doubt that the political positions have become radicalized with the so-called leftist governments or with the implementation of what has been defined as new socialism. Brazil, Argentina, Venezuela, Uruguay, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Chile, besides Cuba, of course, are referred to by analysts as the Latin American nations that took a turn to the left. Turn to the left or return to populism? I think that's the question. In a speech given at the OAS, my good friend and the former president of Brazil, Fernando Henrique Cardoso, warned us some years ago that we might be witnessing the return of populism in Latin America, a phenomenon that in his point of view represents the negation of democracy. I share with him a feeling of déjà vu when confronting once again the empty sentences that used to make up the rhetoric of political and military leaders of the 50s. Leaders that left nothing but bad memories. As President Cardoso said, there are few more serious enemies to democracy in Latin America than the populism and demagoguery within its borders. In my point of view, We can see today three kinds of political tendencies in Latin America. First, we have some countries that live under a sort of moderate left or social democracy, compatible with the protection of private property and investments, free trade, and the individual initiative. And these countries are Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and now Uruguay. Second, we have countries that preach the search of the so-called socialism of the 21st century, a more extreme socialism with a bigger intervention of the state on the private initiative. These countries are Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Nicaragua. And these countries, particularly the first three, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Bolivia, have tried to adopt the new socialist outlines through deep constitutional amendments. In fact, at this moment, constitutional assemblies are gathered in Ecuador and in Bolivia with the goal of incorporating the socialism of the 21st century in their fundamental laws. Venezuela has already adopted a new constitution under Hugo Chavez's regime, and in recent days, for general surprise, there was an additional attempt to approve new constitutional amendments in order to deepen the socialism. This failed. It cannot be ignored that several times these reforms have the purpose, explicit or not, of increasing the presidential power in detriment of the autonomy of the other branches of the public power. These four governments mentioned above also show a hostile, open attitude against the United States of America, whose policies they label as imperialistic. And finally, there is a third group of states that share center political positions with government focused equally in programs of economic growth and social development. Basically, this group is compromised with the remaining Latin American states, including Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Paraguay, as well all the Caribbean and Central American nations, with the exception of Nicaragua and Cuba. As an isolated element, because of its political and historical particularity, we encounter ourselves with Cuba, a case that you know even better than me. After observing these three main tendencies, it is important to highlight a positive fact. In every single case, all the political changes have taken place in Latin America fall within the democratic institutionalism. And I think that's very important to point, because it allows us to conclude that the societies of our countries are reaching political maturity, a level that has nothing to envy from other regions throughout the world. And prior to concluding this initial analysis to the political tendencies of the Latin American region, I will say that it is good and healthy, absolutely healthy, that diverse political tendencies have presence within the region. That is what democracy is for. This guarantees that there is an equal opportunity for the different conceptions on how to rule the state to reach power. What becomes truly important is the fact that they come supported by democratic and transparent processes, and they do not endorse irresponsible behaviors within the nation, such as populism or aggressive or interventionist attitudes against third countries. And having said this, I would like to speak more in detail about five countries that are paradigmatic inside each one of the above mentioned tendencies: Mexico, Brazil, Chile, Venezuela, and finally my country, Colombia. In the case of Mexico, we should highlight the strengthening of its democracy after many decades of a single-party government, all of them ruled by the PRI. In the year 2000, the victory of former President Vicente Fox marked the end of 71 years of absolute prevalence of the PRI. Later, in the year 2006, Mexico faced the alternative of choosing between electing as a president a center candidate, the actual president Felipe Calderón, or following the tendency of several other Latin American countries and vote for the leftist option embodied by Andrés Manuel López Obrador. In a very close election, Felipe Calderón triumphed, and because of that, Mexico has continued on its path of political moderation. It continues to defend the free trade and private initiative and have also maintained its traditional autonomy in the field of international relationships. In regard to its relationship with the United States, Mexico has firmly protested against the hard immigration laws and the disgraceful wall that is being built on the frontier between these two countries. But on the other hand, it has also strengthened its cooperation in the joint fight against the world problem of illicit drug trade. In fact, Mexico is making an agreement with the United States, a sort of what I promote in Colombia, Plan Colombia or Plan Mexico, which they named the Initiative of Mérida, so that the United States helps in the fight against drug trafficking and organized crime. Last year, in October, President Bush requested the United States Congress $500 million for this initiative. Let's see the cases of Brazil and Chile. Although the government of both countries are classified as socialists, they put into practice a kind of moderate socialism, non-state center, that is compatible with responsible economic policies. It is a fact that President Lula of Brazil awakened many worries when he reached power in 2002. It was fear that his past as a union leader would influence him to make extreme and populist decisions. Fortunately, this never happened, and Lula's government has been characterized by its moderation in economic matters and its responsibility as the visible leader of Mercosur, a group of countries that include Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay. And he has also expressed his interest in the creation of UNASUR, the South American Community of Nations organization, which is currently under negotiation. It is true that Lula's government was seen as the enemy of the continental free trade, and because of that, it contributed to the failure of the project of the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the FTAA. Nevertheless, he has developed both a conciliatory international policy and an economic responsible policy towards private investment and international organisms like the International Monetary Fund. And another good example of moderate socialism is Chile. It has two socialist governments in a row. Good friends, Ricardo Lagos and Michelle Bachelet. This country has turned into an example of successful international insertion, political stability, and economic growth for the entire continent. If there is any country that has opened their markets to the world and signed treaties of free trade with nations in every corner of the globe, it is Chile. Their economic results and social progress are remarkable. The case of Venezuela and its president, Hugo Chavez, deserve, I think, special attention. President Chavez has turned into the visible head of the socialism of the 21st century, mentioned previously by me. As well, he has become the bitterest critic of the United States, Colombia, and now the entire continent. Under his political and economic influence, there are countries such as Bolivia, Ecuador, and even Cuba. Thomas Friedman published an article a couple of years ago on Foreign Policy magazine in which he demonstrated that freedom and the price of petroleum were inversely related. This is the great risk that Venezuela is facing. It is ruled by a charismatic, unconventional, and polemic character who leads Venezuela's destiny since 1998 as the commander-in-chief of the Bolivariana Revolution. It is very easy to write and pay checks with the checking accounts fueled by oil money, but many of those checks are paid as expenses of future progress. A huge public expense based on the high prices of petroleum can take Venezuela to a calamity in the future. It could seriously affect the productive infrastructure of the country. This is what you will know in the books of economic history named the Dutch illness, which can only be avoided with the wise and responsible measures. Only a few Arab states can afford to exclusively depend on the energy resources. And this is due to the fact that the proportion between these resources and their population is huge. This is not the case of Venezuela. The countries that are rich in hydrocarbons, especially during the high price days, should not forget that those hard lessons learned by the crisis of the early 70s. The high price days should be dedicated to strengthen institutions and to secure democracy. Otherwise, they can be wasted in populist policies, thus jeopardizing future stability. It is necessary to recognize his great influence, back up by his generous checkbook, which grants power to Hugo Chavez over countries of similar ideology, such as Bolivia, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Cuba, and which has also spilled over more moderate countries like Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil. His aversion against the government of the United States and the government of Colombia, which he categorized as friends of this nation, Colombia, Peru, and Mexico, can increase his popularity among the Latin American population who still believes in the communist rhetoric or the romantic idea of a social revolution. This is something that we should keep in mind because President Chavez will continue to be a source of surprises in the upcoming years. However, it is necessary to highlight that for the first time since he reached power, President Chavez suffered an electoral setback when his proposal of constitutional amendments that include the possibility of his endless re-election was defeated. This demonstrates that the opposition in Venezuela begins to get organized and that even more Chavistas are in disagreement with his perpetuation in power. And I will finish this quick recount with a reference to my country, Colombia. Without a doubt, it will state that the policies of the Colombian government are located in the antipodes of those of the Venezuelan government. Having said this, presidents live today an ideological crash that has transcended into the personal and diplomatic arena. For my nation, and most likely for the international community, any external intervention on the internal state conflict is unacceptable. Without a doubt, Colombia is the closest friend and ally of the United States of America. Through the Plan Colombia, which was designed by my government and President Clinton's government, continued by President Bush, we built a strategic alliance to jointly fight terrorism and drug trafficking. As well, Colombia is a deeply democratic country, a believer in the empire of the law, friend of the free trade and foreign investment. Only a few other nations have suffered the devastating consequences of drug trafficking and terrorism, and the cruel and implacable violence of a guerrilla which has no popular support and which is nowadays recognized as the biggest drug cartel on the planet. As a former president of my country and as a former ambassador to Washington, with this sadness, deep sadness, I should say that Colombians, we are not able to understand why the U.S. Congress continues to delay the increase and increase the uncertainty of the approval of the free trade agreement between the United States and our country. Aimed within a neighborhood where many proclaim an anti-American speech, Colombia keeps defending the principles of democracy and free trade and leads the world fight against illicit drugs. If the United States Congress were to refuse the approval of the free trade agreement with Colombia, that the same agreement that has already been approved for Mexico, several Central American countries, Dominican Republic, Chile, Peru, this will be like turning its back on its closest friend and ally in the continent. Dear friends, Latin America moves today among political tendencies of extreme left, moderate left, and center. Between economic responsibility and populism. Fortunately, and in spite of authoritarian tendencies of some leaders, democracy is the general rule in our continent, and it is the most important thing. Nobody denies that we have big problems of poverty and inequality, which we fight day after day. But neither can it be ignored that we have advanced a lot and we have built democratic and social institutions with good results for the poorest. This is the political situation which can be despised by the Latin American governments during the first days of 2008. Its future is dependent on the responsibility of its rulers, on the good election of its people, and on the support of the United States and other nations of the world to our economy and our peace process of democratic consolidation. I don't want to finish this speech, Josephine, without thanking Stephanie for our gathering last night in your house. We have such a good time yesterday, so many nice people there. So, Stephanie, thank you very much, and we hope that you invite us permanently here to Naples. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, when you come back here to live permanently, we have a couple of books for you about the history and the quality of life in Marco Island also the great city of Naples.
Thank you.
Now, I'll turn you over to Josephine.
Okay.
Questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. President, for your illuminating and thought-provoking presentation. You've given us a lot of things to think about. The questions have been forthcoming. How do you see Colombia's relations with China and India developing in the future?
I think for us, it's very important to try to look the other side also of the world. And that's why, first of all, we're very worried with what is happening with the free trade agreement. For us, it's fundamental, the free trade agreement. Colombia will be a different country with the free trade agreement. If we're talking about ending the problem of illicit drugs in our country, the free trade is going to be fundamental for us. And that's why I think it's very important that the U.S. Congress understand that we need that free trade agreement. And on the other hand, for us, China, India, and the Pacific, it's very important. As you know, Colombia is also a Pacific country. We want to be members of APEC. For us, it's fundamental to look that side of the region. I think there's a stand-up for the membership of OPEC until year 2009 or 2010. I think that the Colombian government is working very hard to try to be a member of APEC, the Asian Pacific Community. That for us also will be a big change. We're starting to have big exchange with China, and also we're starting to have exchange basically in the IT with India. I think that we have in the region a very, very important location for many of these new IT technologies, because our language, for example, call centers in Colombia, it's now a huge business because we don't have any accent in the Spanish community, so it's very important for the type of business. And with China, we are starting also, first of all, have relation. China is investing in oil in Colombia. Colombia right now, we are producing about 500,000 barrels a day. Half of those barrels stay in the country, and half of them we export them. We are really wanting to invest in new oil fields. In my government, we changed the legislation so that foreign investment could come to Colombia. And one of those investments are coming from China today. We hope that we could find some of them. We need the oil also in Colombia. We have a good neighbor, Venezuela, so I hope that some of that oil drops to our country and we could get that some of that, no? So that's something that we are working. But for us, first of all, I think that we need to integrate ourselves. We need to integrate through the Andean community. Unfortunately, President Chavez is leaving the Andean community, and I think that for us is very important. Look for the free trade agreement with the United States, and really for internal and regional agreements of free trade inside the region are going to be fundamental for us.
A couple of questions together. Would you please tell us more about your abduction and time as a hostage, and what is being done in Colombia to address the activities of the FARC?
How much time do we have?
All day.
That will be a long story. First, regarding the FARC, regarding the hostages, no, is the question?
Yes. The time as a hostage.
I think, first of all, in the case of the FARC, as you know, today they have more or less 45 people that they call political kidnaps. One of them is a former presidential candidate. We have members of the Congress, senators, and members of the House, and some military and police still held by the FARC. What they call the exchangeable, political exchangeable, there are 45 of them. Still, they have 700 members of the police and the army, and more or less there are 2,000 Colombians still kidnapped in my country. So regarding the FARC, I think that we should start working. Really, I think that we need a humanitarian agreement according to international laws. I think that's the only way of getting these people out. And saying this, I'd like to mention that during my government, with the FARC, we did an exchange of prisoners of war. Not prisoner of war, because you cannot say prisoner of war, humanitarian exchange. We exchanged 18 ill guerrilleros, certified by International Red Cross Committee, against 350 policemen and soldiers that were held for more than 5-6 years. So we did that humanitarian agreement, and so I think that we have the experience to do another one. I think that now there are two proposals on the table. One of the FARC asking the demilitarization of two municipalities, and in 45 days they will give back all the political kidnapped people that they have. And on the other hand, this is an encounter zone, also demilitarized zone in Colombia proposed by the president. So I think that we should work very hard and very quickly to try to achieve that and bring back not only the 45 political hostages that they have, but also the 700 police and army people that they have. And I think that if we start this international agreement, a humanitarian agreement, could be a very important first step with the FARC to try to end with kidnapping in Colombia. As you know, Josephine, I went to the middle of the jungle in Colombia in 1998 when I was elected president, surrounded by more than 2,000 guerrilleros. I sit down with the leader of the FARC and their leaders to try to achieve peace. And I think that if we start working today in getting them back to their homes as quick as possible and starting negotiation, the end of kidnapping in Colombia, that's going to be very important. I think that the FARC should understand that if something has united us in the world today, is our fight against terrorism. And they have to understand that kidnapping people, it's going to be judged by the international community. The international community is not accepting any kind of hostage or kidnapping. As you know, you have 3 Americans as hostages in Colombia. I think they are the oldest hostages in the U.S. history. I think they have been in the jungle for 5 or 6 years now. So those are the 3 oldest hostages in your history. So I think that we need to work in the humanitarian agreement. As a someone that I was kidnapped, I know that what is happening to these people in the jungle, their feelings. I always said that the worst crime against a human being is kidnapping, being kidnapped, because you lose the 2 most important things of a human being, your freedom and your family. And that's why, knowing in a personal experience, that's why we need to work very hard and try to get these people out. If you imagine 7, 8, 9 years, 10 years in the jungles of Colombia, being in a jungle is being like in the Everglades here. For 10 years, imagine being you for 10 years in the Everglades. That's something that, that we have to wear. Why I was kidnapped? Because since very young, I was the editor of a news program. And I've been fighting against the drug problem in my country for many, many years. When I started, I received the first the threat of Pablo Escobar in the year 1982, when I was running for the city council of Bogota, and because we decided that we need to go after the drug lords, we started working with some journalists to try to put in TV, on radio, and the newspaper who were the leaders of the cartels. We're talking in 82, 83, 84. At the end, 1988, he kidnapped me because we signed a treaty with the United States of extradition with the United States. So they know that if they are extradited to the United States, they will be really paying their sentence in this country. And they try to put all the political pressure into the establishment to avoid extradition to the United States. So that's why they kidnapped me, trying to put pressure to the government. My father was the leader of the opposition. I was running for the mayor office of Bogota. We elect mayors only in 1988 for the first time, before the mayors of Colombia were appointed by the president. So it was a big, big, big change. So the Medellin cartel and the Cali cartel together create a group to put pressure into the country that it was called the Extraditables. And they said they have a slogan saying, we prefer a tomb in Colombia than a jail in the United States. So I was the first one that, as a political figure, was kidnapped by them. I was there for one very, very, very long week, very difficult one. It was kidnapping Bogota. Then they took me by helicopter to a place near Medellin. And I was released really by luck. It was a miracle because the day I talked to my family, I talked to them only once, they told me that they were going to kidnap the Attorney General of Colombia. And I was very, very close where he was kidnapped. So the attorney was kidnapped. He was injured in his back. They killed all his bodyguards. They were going to bring the attorney to the place I was held. It was a room 2x1. He was really bleeding. I was very worried because I said, oh, the attorney is going to die in my room, because I heard the people that were taking care of me that saying, you have to open a place in your bed. I said, 2x1, how can I get the attorney here? He's ill, he's bleeding. And in the search of the attorney in that area, they found the place I was there. I remember that I tried to break the day every day taking a bath. So I leave my room, I had the bath in front, I take a shower and come back to my room. I think that was the way of trying to you know, break the day in two. You know? So after I took my bath, this guy came. I heard a lot of noise in my house. And when you're kidnapped, you are afraid of the worst thing that could happen to you is if they want to change you of place, because you know that you are in danger and it's difficult. And so I heard all this noise in the morning in the radio. I had a radio. I heard in the morning that they kidnapped the attorney. So these guys start shouting that the police arrived to the area. So you have all these memoirs of films. And I said, okay, what's going to happen here? If the army arrive here or the police arrive here? One of my kidnappers came to me. I was finishing to dress. He handcuffed me, and he said, stay here, wait, because I think that the authority arrived, the police arrived. So immediately you start thinking, all these Hollywood movies saying, okay, this guy is going to be back here, I'm handcuffed, I'm sitting in my bed, this guy is going to put a pillow on my head, he's going to shoot me, kill me, and run away, because that's the way what we always seen in the movies. And exactly as that, this guy came back to our 15 rifles, a UC machine, a lot of ammunition. He put the UC machine on my head, and I said, okay, I'm dead. And he said, you are my insurance policy. And I said, why? No, because you're going to negotiate with them my freedom. So I said, okay, let me talk, let me be the guy, and I'll be in charge of this. And they start shouting, who is there? The police. And I said, I am Andres Pastrana, and I'm with a kidnapper that he has a UC machine on my head, and this is wanting to kill me. You do anything, he will kill me. So he said, come out of your room. So I said, look, I'm three steps of the door. Please don't shoot, because this guy is going to kill me. So I'm two steps from the door, one step from the door, I'm going to be out. And when I was out, I saw these two policemen pointing, and one of them said, oh my God, we came to find the saint and we find the virgin, you know? Because they thought that the attorney was there, no? They never realized, because I was kidding in Bogota, and they never thought that I was in Medellin or near Medellin, never. So I started walking down. He said, okay, come down. And after you arrived down, you have left hand was the garage. Right hand was the gardener. So the kidnapper said, you know how to drive? Yes. Get into the car. It had a Toyota that in Colombia, that is a car used by the Land Cruiser. Toyota was the car used by the narco traffickers. So I was sitting in the driving seat. And he said, okay, start the car on. I said, snow key. So he said, okay, come down, open the hood. So I opened the hood, and he said he was going to do a straight contact to start the car. So I said, this is my opportunity. This guy's going to be inside the car. I was holding the hood, and I said, I'm going to kill this guy. When he started trying to start electrically the car, I would do something to him and run away. So these guys start working on the car, and I said, oh my God, what happened? I hit this guy, I will run away. I surrounded absolutely by the police. They will think that I am the kidnapper, so they will kill me. So I prefer to stay here. Nothing happened. He could not get started the car, so we went out to the gardener, and I was surrounded by six or seven policemen. And it was very impressive, because the farm in which I was held was with a lot of, like a concentration camp, you know, a lot of wires around, nothing. And this guy, my kidnapper, was saying, how am I going to leave here? I said, wait a second, we'll find out. And we had with this conversation with the policeman for, I don't know, 1 minute, 1 hour, you never know. They said, release Andres, and he said, no, if you do something, I will kill Pastrana. No, release him. No, at the end, he said, if a police won't exchange for him, I will free Pastrana. And I said to him, okay, I will agree with you if you don't do anything to the policeman. So he said, I promise you. So suddenly a policeman came. They handcuffed the policeman. He left two R-15 rifles, and they ran away. And then we got out of this farm. We jumped the fence and we started running, and suddenly a car was coming. They picked me up. And this was a guy that recognized me. So he said, I'm going to take you to the mayor's office of a small town that was called El Retiro. So I was left there, and the police returned to the farm I was held. And they said to me, like 5 minutes, the moment I was reading, all the whole army of Pablo Escobar arrived there to take me to another place. So it was really a good luck. But unfortunately, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was arriving home. And in the way to my house, they capture a tape of Pablo Escobar talking to one of his killers, that his nickname is Popeye, like the sailor. This guy now is in jail. He was the one that kidnapped me. He's accused of more than 400 homicides. So Popeye was saying to Escobar, look, the Attorney General is getting wider and wider. He's bleeding a lot. What I should do with him. And so Escobar said, Andres Pastrana ran away. He escaped from us. Killed the Attorney General. So they killed the day. Unfortunately, the Attorney General, and I returned to my home with these very sad news. And well, that's part of the story that we could say.
Wonderful, Mr. President. Okay.
It does have it.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're honored to have you here in Naples.
No, thank you. Thank you, Joseph. Okay. Thank you. Malcolm. Thank you.
Okay, meeting's adjourned. Please leave your name badges as you leave. Again, thanks for the President's wonderful address. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Malcolm.
Wow. Great job.